While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM,
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On The Radio News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company from now up until 14:30. And of course, today is Friday, the 24th of April, 2026. And of course, if the early part of the week is about momentum, Friday is about performance. About performance becoming visible and tangibly calculations of whether the nation is moving forward. Now, across the country, from Swakopmund to Rundu, Chuarongo to Rudret, Kathmandu to Hobabas, the pace of the week is now revealing its results. What began as intention is now taking shape in outcomes, in decisions, and in the first real indicators of progress. So today, we turn our focus on delivery and a follow through. How are institutions holding up under sustained pressure, and beyond the announcements and the commitments, are we seeing consistent execution where it matters most, in communities, in businesses, and in the everyday experiences of Namibians? Now we continue tracking Namibia's evolving economic trajectory with a particular focus on green industrialization, but today we bring it closer to home on the consumer's aspect and the country's positioning in an increasingly competitive global environment. Now, as the week progresses, so does agency, because in today's economy, timing is not just important, it is decisive. Now, young Namibians remain central to this story. Their role is no longer on the horizon. It is an active, immediate, and influential. From entrepreneurship to digital innovation, they are shaping outcomes in real time. The key question now is whether the system around them are keeping pace with their drive and their ambition. We also stay focused on governance in action, not just what is being promised, but what is being delivered as policies. As policy moves from planning into implementation, the phases shift to accountability, to efficiency and tangible results. Where progress is evident, we'll spotlight it. And where challenges persist, we'll interrogate them. And as always, we remain grounded in lived reality where national strategy meets daily life. Because ultimately, the success of any plan is measured not in statements, but in the impact on the ground. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, do expect insight that sharpens perspective, analysis that adds clarity, and conversations that do matter. This right here is On The Radio News Analysis, only on Eagle FM, where we don't just report on the story, but we unpack it. Now today, a public hearing by the Parliament Standing Committee on Economy, Industry, Planning and Public Administration was held at Parliament Gardens on the motion whether the existing laws are truly protecting Namibians from exploitation by lending institutions and informal money lenders. But before we get right into the conversation, let's take a listen to Ms. Hilka from NAMFISER, as she represented NAMFISER on their stance regarding microlenders. Let's take a listen to that and we'll get back into motion.
In terms of the law, whereas the microlending act, as I indicated earlier, the microlending act really focuses on how is the lender behaving in as far as the consumer is concerned. What are they doing in terms of disclosing requirements and making things clear to the consumer? So to be more specific, the Microlending Act deals with issues around the registration of a lender. There are very specific requirements they need to comply with for them to be registered. It deals with the behavior of the consumer. There is a whole standard that we call a conduct standard. That conduct standard talks about this is the behavior we expect of you as the lender when you are engaging with a borrower. It also, we have a whole standard on affordability assessment. I've spoken about that one earlier. And also the Act also emphasizes again on what are the charges that are allowed by law. But of course, we need to recognize that the consumer credit landscape is also continuously evolving. And as a result of that, we need to be continuously also looking at how do we bring the law along to ensure that as the landscape is changing, the laws are also supporting that landscape. And again, those are areas that will be dealt with when we speak to the consumer credit bill. Now, just to use examples and be more practical in terms of what has the Micro Lending Act been able to do or what has been the impact of the Micro Lending Act coming into force. Now, maybe just first, from a conduct perspective and a consumer protection perspective, we say that for a consumer to participate in the financial sector, the consumer must trust the financial sector and the players. The consumer must have confidence that the sector is operating appropriately and that as consumers, they will be protected. Now, when you look at the increase in numbers of microlenders, in 2021, we have seen about 86 new lenders registering, but that number has been increasing. And when we look at this increase, so this is not the total numbers of microlenders, this is just the increases. So when we look at these numbers, the view that we are getting is that the lenders are increasing because they see room for more business and they see that there's a market. But we are also saying that the consumers, probably after the coming into effect of the Micro Lending Act, are more confident that they will be better protected because of the Micro Lending Act, which provides powers. And mind you, of course, with the coming into force of the Micro Lending Act, our consumer education focus has also been geared towards ensuring that the consumers also understand that there's a Micro Lending Act that provides the regulator with certain powers, and also to try to focus on the fact that we also have a consumer complaints unit within NAMFISA, where consumers can come and complain against microlenders amongst other service providers. Also, again, one of the powers provided for in terms of the Micro Lending Act is to cancel the registration of microlenders or to deregister them when they are not behaving in accordance with the requirements of the law. And this slide just shows the numbers per year that we deregister. You, of course, see that there was a dip in 2023, 2024. So firstly, the Micro Lending Act became operational at the end of 2019. So really kicked in from 2020. And that's why you see that from 2021, we really started applying it and we started seeing that there are certain lenders misbehaving and we deregister them. And then you see that there was a dip in 2023. We started seeing that some change in the behavior of micro lenders. You also see it later from a presentation, a slide I have on complaints. We started seeing some change in the behavior of the consumers, and therefore we saw the numbers dipping a bit. The dip in 2024 is not only attributed to a change we saw, but also it was also a timing issue. Some of the deregistration cancellations were then done in the next year in 2024. But also, when you look at the powers in terms of the Micro Lending Act, the Micro Lending Act has provided powers to issue penalties against micro lenders that are misbehaving. And these penalties can be applied in cases where we find that a micro lender has not done the affordability assessment, which is a requirement by law. The penalties can be imposed where a lender makes a consumer sign blank documents. And this, again, was a historical issue. We saw before the Micro Lending Act came into force that what a lender will do is they will provide a consumer with a loan. They don't insert what is the interest that will be charged. They will not insert over what period they will repay this amount. And later, they merely change things to the disadvantage of the consumer. So now the law is saying that as a lender, you are not allowed to make a consumer sign a document that is not fully completed because it leaves room for manipulation. The law also specifically says that a lender cannot collect personal documents of a consumer. We have seen in the past what lenders used to do is they collect the consumer's bank cards. What do they do midnight, the day before salary lending in their bank account? They go stand at the ATMs and they are drawing the money. And for some consumers, everything will be gone. Now the law is saying that if we find you in possession of bank cards or PIN codes or identification documents of consumers, you are contravening the Micro Lending Act, and therefore you'll be subjected to penalties. We also pick some of these things up through the complaints. We used to have a lot of complaints prior to the microlending act coming into force, where consumers will report lenders that are taking in their personal documents. Right now, we hardly hear about these matters. They have become very, very minimal because the lenders also specifically know that this is prohibited by the law. There are also specific provisions that are very specific in terms of that. Penalties can be imposed if a lender charges rates that are in excess of what is allowed by the law, or where a lender charges default interest beyond the period prescribed by law. Now, from a complaints perspective, just again a slide to demonstrate the impact that the Microlending Act had. So I indicated earlier that the Microlending Act became operational at the end of 2029. So 2020 is largely where we really started implementing. So prior to that, the number of complaints that consumers used to lodge with Nanfisa were very, very high. But of course, we also appreciate that not every aggrieved consumer necessarily comes to Nanfisa, because of course, not everyone knows about Nanfisa, and that's why we have continuous consumer education initiatives to ensure that consumers understand that there is a recourse mechanism for them. So if you look, for instance, at 2017 to 2020, the complaints were quite high. But from 2020, when we now started properly implementing the Microlending Act, making the microlending aware of the powers we have, continue with our consumer education drive, we started seeing a dip in consumer complaints. And the microlending sector was one of those sectors that had the highest numbers of complaints. Where you will, for instance, let me take 2018, where the complaints, the microlending complaints were very high. So at that time, you would see that complaints of microlenders alone were 400. And that at that time represented more than 50% of all complaints that we had received from the whole non-bank financial sector. That's how bad it was in relation to the microlending. And that number has significantly dipped. And even now, when we compare them to the other non-bank financial sector players, the microlenders no longer come as number one in terms of complaints lodged against them. They will normally be now around number three. But also, when you look at the complaints, whenever we look at the complaints, we also look at them against the loans that are actually issued. When you look at 2023, for instance, the loans that were issued, 665,000. When you look at the number of complaints that were then received in 2023, which was 116, and you convert that to a percentage of the loans actually granted, it was a 0.02% of the loans actually granted. And the trend is quite similar with the years that followed as well. Now, I indicated that we have a complaints unit within Nanfisa, and maybe just to indicate one of the other reasons why we saw a dip also in complaints, we later also introduced a circular where we are very specific with not just the micro lenders, but the other non-bank financial players as well, where we say that if a consumer has a complaint, we do not want Nanfisa to be the first point of call. We want to give you an opportunity so that you identify where things are going wrong, and to also give you an opportunity to correct things where you might be able to complain, to correct. So now we have seen that dip. But when we look at the complaints, of course, we assess what is the complainant saying, what has been the conduct of the lender in the process. So what we are seeing currently is that you find now that about 50% of the complaints we are resolving in favor of the complainant, which means 50% of those lenders were still wrong or they didn't do things appropriately. But then you find that around 50% of the complaints, you also find that the lender was actually not to be faulted. Now I previously indicated that we do recognize that because things are continuously changing, the legislative landscape also needs to change, and I don't want to repeat that because we are going to come to the Consumer Credit Bill. Now, in as far as the interest rates are concerned, the question was whether the interest rates being charged by the microlenders are fair. Maybe to start off, I think it's important to indicate that the way we see it is that the fairness thereof needs to be assessed against the legislative, regulatory, and the socioeconomic environment. And I have previously indicated that the charges the lending rates of the micro lenders and money lenders are regulated by law. And I've spoken earlier about the Usury Act, which specifies what are the rates that the micro lenders can actually use. And that was very, I believe, a very good foresight for the legislative makers then, because they intended to protect the vulnerable consumers. Now, of course, the micro lenders, again, like I spoke to the Micro Lending Act earlier, they are obliged by law to comply with what is in the Usury Act, to comply with the caps that are provided for in terms of what they can charge. And of course, affordability concerns will always arise if the fees are too high or if the lenders are behaving in manners that they shouldn't be behaving. And therefore, NAMFISA is obliged by law to look at what the lenders are doing and ensure that compliance is actually enforced. And the Usury Act also empowers the registrar to be assessing whether the interest rates are still appropriate and ensure that the rates are kept accordingly. Now,
calls mount for urgent labor law reform as Namibia grapples with inequality. And from one of the consumers speaking, say that the existing, that is Washikongo, says the existing laws are outdated and that there is a need for urgent reform. States that workers are still being exploited, leading to wider inequalities. Poverty and depression are among many Namibian people, especially the low class categories. And he says we need to review our laws as they must have some sort of humanity. And he continues on to say that it's very painful to see a country with about 3.5 million, which is not really the correct one, being ranked second in the world as inequalities within a country. And this shows how unfair distribution of resources is in Namibia. Now, Namibia, according to the World Bank's 2022 report, Inequality in Southern Africa, Namibia is the second most unequal country in the world. And it has a Gini index of 59.1, placing it just behind South Africa. And the Gini index measures income distribution from zero to perfect inequality to 100. One person has everything in Namibia's 59.1 means inequality in consumption is about 45% higher than the average for upper middle income countries. South Africa is ranked as the most unequal country globally. Namibia coming in second place and Zambia coming in the third. Now, meanwhile, according to Hilma Nambo Ita, as she spoke today at the public hearing, she stated that all the stakeholders were, because of many Namibians that are struggling under the weight of debt, and not debt taken for investment or ambition, but debt taken just to survive food, rent, school fees. And this is reality that has brought them together for today's public hearing. Now, the numbers are quite high. In the first quarter of 2025 alone, microlenders have issued over 1.5 billion Namibian dollars in loans. In 2024, the disbursements by microlenders rose by 44.9%. That is reaching 5.2 billion Namibian dollars. Now, behind every figure, obviously, there is a person, often a low income earner, locked in terms of repayment that leaves little room to breathe, let alone build a future. Namibia is a constitutional democracy built on human dignity, equality, and social justice. It is therefore unacceptable that Namibian citizens, especially the most vulnerable, are being trapped in cycles of debt that erode their dignity and destabilize their livelihood. She continues today to say that today's submissions may help or will help assess whether our laws are truly fit for the purpose, and that it will look on whether interest rates, deduction code, fees and repayment terms are fair and transparent, and whether debt collection practices respect human dignity, whether regulatory bodies have the teeth to enforce compliance, and whether financial literacy and consumer protection measures are reaching those who need them most. Furthermore, it will also examine the broader impact because indebtedness is not just a financial problem, but it reduces productivity, strains households, and weakens national economic performance. Now, speaking during the engagement, those on the Parliament Standing Committee on Economic Industry Planning and Administration, and of course, they posted some questions towards NAMFISA, the Bank of Namibia, who was also represented the Ministry of Finance, with Minister Erica Shafuda and her team also being there. But now let's take a listen to one of the Member of Parliament, who's also Parliament Standing Committee on Economic, to hear on this motion. Let's then listen to Justine Jonas. But before that, let's pause for a scheduled commercial break, and we're back to listen to her on the question she posed to them, which I find very relevant to this discussion. Nonetheless, let's pause here. We'll be back shortly.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the memo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
This is, first I'll start with the Minister of Finance. Minister of Finance, you are an employer of about over 300,000 public servants. As an employer, what is your responsibility as an employer to protect your employees from this extent? As you are introducing this, have you done a risk assessment to make sure that your employees are protected and not to be where we are today as we are discussing this? Now, this is the first one. The second one, still at the Minister of Finance, and I think I'm also going to take it with NAMFISA at the later stage. The financial literacy which you are talking about, how deeper are we doing it? There is a tendency, I think, within the government institutions, we do education, but education is more limited on online education, forgetting that many of our people, they do not even have smartphones. They have, you know, how do you call this, kamagojis, yeah? How deeper do we do it when we are saying we are doing financial literacy to our people? How are we doing it? Do you have an example? Do you have proof that we went as far as the school at Mukwe constituency? Deeper down, there's a combined school, there's a cleaner who does not have a smartphone. How do they get information through you as an employer educating them to make sure that they do not get in trouble as they are today? I think it's very critical because we need to change our mindset. When we are saying this, is it really a true reflection of what's happening on the ground? Because we have also seen that we are losing people. Eh? People are killing themselves. It's bad. It's really, you know, it's a bad picture in the face of an employer. How many teachers have we lost this year or last year who just committed suicide? How are we addressing that? As an employer, I'm addressing you as an employer because you have a responsibility towards your employees. Now, Chairperson, because I'm limited to three, I think I'm done with Minister of Finance. I will not come back to them. But then other questions are more for NAMFISA. Now, NAMFISA, one question before I come to the second round. You said your mandate, and you are proudly saying our mandate is to protect the consumers. Very good. But your presentation is actually contradicting because we are not really seeing much of what he's saying to protect us consumers. You are more protecting the micro renters. I think my understanding. your presentation. I don't know if I misunderstood you, but that's what I'm getting. Now, understanding that your mandate is to protect the consumers, why are we here? Why do we have, you know, about how many? 17 billion. Eh? 17 billion. How did we get here as a regulator? How did we get here as a regulator? Maybe let me end there as the first question, because I have many questions coming, Chairperson, for Namfisa for now.
Another question that was posed was from Inaya Ngari, who I will be engaging. We'll be engaging her later on within the show. But for now, I also find it quite interesting that we hear one of the questions that she posed, or a couple of questions that she posed also. And she is also part of the Parliament Standing Committee on Economy, Industry Planning and Public Administration. And of course, as a member of Parliament.
Now, Honorable Minister, first I would want to thank you for your presentation. One of the things that you mentioned was that there's a need to strengthen monitoring, especially over the unregulated lenders. Now, I've always looked at the financial sector as quite an interesting one. One, because you look at and you try to make comparisons between the financial sector compared to other sectors. In the labor sector, for example, I'm sure Honorable Jonas would second me on this one. In the labor sector, when we have issues on labor disputes and so forth, and even before those labor disputes come up, we have what we call inspectors, labor inspectors that would go to workplaces to ensure that the working conditions is affords every Namibian worker a dignified environment to work in, but also a dignified working condition. I've always just wondered why we can't do the same in the financial sector, where we say there's a need to strengthen monitoring of these unregulated micro lenders. Part of those mechanisms could also involve coming up with a system that allows for inspection, on-site inspection, sending out individuals from the industry that are, of course, familiar with the law and also the regulations that sort of guide that industry, as the ministry or the minister considered such a mechanism, and what are some of the other mechanisms that would contribute to strengthening this monitoring of these what we call unregulated lenders too. And this one is to Namfisa, our dear friend. When we brought this motion to the House, one of the intentions, and we did it deliberately, was to really understand what are the challenges that Namfisa is genuinely faced with. And during your presentation, I found it quite interesting that you used the term, and it's unintended consequences. And we try to humanize what unintended consequences mean and try to contextualize that and bring it down to a human basis. Unintended consequences, in my thinking, would be that the system or the person that introduced the system didn't mean for it to be exploited or didn't mean for these loopholes to exist, but they do exist now. And so when you went to your third or fourth slide, where you showed a graph of the lenders and how many of those have the boom, basically demonstrating the increase basically over the years. One of the things you said was that perhaps people have found an interest in coming up with micro-lending businesses or actually take part in this particular sector. But could it also be that individuals have now weaknesses when it comes to regulation, and therefore we see this boom, and it's not necessarily because they've seen an opportunity to engage in business, but rather an opportunity to exploit Namibians, which has happened, unfortunately, and has been happening over the years. Three, and finally, Chair, through you, I really wanted to understand. The Minister of Finance also, I think, alluded to the system administrator that allowed for deductions above the allowed threshold to take place, but that was not the intention. I really wanted to understand what really happened then. Why? How come we've allowed it for so long and for it to take place for so long and for so many years that individuals, I mean, when I grew up, let me share a quick story. Growing up as a child, as a Namibian child in this country, people who worked as police officers and teachers, it was a, those were respected professions. Today, those are not necessarily respected professions. One, of course, we can talk about that later, salary, income, and so forth, but also their dependence on microlenders, right? And I think that exceeds any other profession. If you've been sleeping on the job for so long that we only realize that this thing has been going on for so long and it has caused so much pain and also just distraction in society. And what really happened with this system, if the minister can just give us a proper explanation on the system administrator that was given a threshold for deductions, but later on that threshold was exceeded and it continued over the years. I really just wanted to submit those few things. Thank you.
Okay, for now, let's take a listen to some of those answered questions, which I... You be the judge whether it was thoroughly answered or not. Let's now take a listen to Minister Erica Shafuda, that is Minister of Finance. We're back to bring in another speaker who answered partially some of those questions, and then we'll continue.
Your question... Very well, I have captured it. It's just to say, why don't we have a system that will even enable employees already just to check their indebtedness, the level of their indebtedness, in a very comprehensive manner? Very good point, and a takeaway point in this regard. We are not yet there. And I have already said, because of the systems that are not talking to each other, people are taking an advantage of that. Because they know by the time you do a comprehensive due diligence on the employee's indebtedness, he or she has again acquired another financial product that will add to all these other things. But it's a good point. For now, we don't have it. So we have these fragmented systems, one from Nanfisa, one by Bank of Namibia, one by Ministry of Finance, and then the lenders themselves are not feeding us instantly with the information. So that is one of the things that we would want to work on. Honorable Ausiku, thank you very much. Yes, the enforcement part, it really remains a challenge because, like we have said, because of the systems that are not talking to one another, we believe on our side we are really enforcing the one third. But then 50%, you had the 50% from Nafisa, you can also take up to 50% of whatever. So we need to enforce, but enforcement should be backed up by systems that are talking to one another. And then the public awareness, Honorable Ausiku, it was again to talk to the issue of education. And I believe I missed one of the questions by Honorable Jonas again, who spoke about the financial literacy. Our financial literacy, even though we have gone to the regions, to all the 14 regions, we also have gone to some of the schools. But the point and the truth and the truth is that the ones who need to hear the message normally do not attend. And the civil servants, you will have this public, how do you call it? Public lecture or invitation to awareness. They will not come. I remember very, very, very well, financial literacy initiative team had this, even the, what was the campaign? Borrow wisely, save wisely, all this wisely, wisely. Even when you are entering your pension, make sure that you retire wisely, all this wisely, many, many wisely. Even in Windhoek, it was in the government office park. We even invited GIPF to go speak to the civil servants. You count them like this. Yeah? If it's a weekend, it's even worse. During the week, they will tell you they're at work. During the weekend, they are somewhere else. But as a responsible employer, we will continue to strengthen our public awareness, our education campaigns, and so forth. Thank you very much for that question. Honorable Karuku, yes. What does the law say on unregistered lenders or micro lenders. For now, because it's not in the law, that's the loophole that they found. They are doing it because they know, they have studied our laws. They know they are not regulated. Perhaps we can only sum up to say the consumer credit bill that will be coming before the House, to us, is a solution. Because it will now gather all the areas of improvement picked up in the Usury Act, in the Credit Agreement, and the Micro-Lending Act. So when it comes, again, we will seek your support so that we really strengthen the content of that bill to continue protecting our consumers. I will leave it now before Nanfisa, to Mr. Nakari here, to answer the question by Honorable Yengari. But the Honorable Yengari will not go too much into.
It's time for month-end magic at WB. Get a 2-liter Coca-Cola for a sweet $21.99. 700ml all gold tomato sauce for only $34.99. 5 kg best choice white or dry brown sugar for $92.99. And 2 kg sunlight hand wash powder for just $54.99. See all our magical month-end deals at furmanbrock.com. We care.
The question by Honorable Yengari was that it has been happening, what it has been happening for so long, why did the ministry wait? We have been busy with these reforms, and as a result, later in mid last year, we then resolved as a ministry to say it was better to take over the administrator, because at the time the contract with the administrator was going to run its course in December. And then we decided that given the challenges that we were picking, firstly, when you have got the deduction at the ministry, so you were only looking at what is appearing on the payslip. Meantime, you have got debit orders running at the bank. If you are only leaving a minimum of 35%, that was now the system was checking. So that person, when it goes to the bank, they will end up with collecting negative salaries. So also now promoting market efficiency, then we say 2002, you did not have a much developed debit order as it is now. Why is it not that you everything goes to the bank, the debit order, so you don't have the two senders of deduction? Because we observed that it appears the assessment on the affordability by the lenders was only focusing on what is on the payslip, ignoring that what is happening elsewhere at the bank. But as we now know, there is a pushback now, and so it is for the court to decide.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organization.
Welcome back. And now joining us in studio telephonically is Member of Parliament Ina Engari, who also tabled this motion in the House, in the August House, which is titled which is to look on whether the existing laws are truly protecting Namibians from exploitation by lending institutions and informal money lenders. A very good afternoon to you, Ina Engari, and it's a pleasure to have you with me on the Reading News Analysis.
Well, good afternoon, Rafa. Very happy to be here, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Quite an interesting public hearing that was held today at Parliament. I think first and foremost, let's go back to history, right? What was in your mind when you tabled this motion? What is it that actually kind of like was a driving force for you to ensure that this was brought before the August House?
Well, I think one of the driving forces behind the motion was the over-indebtedness. And not just of households, but also of individuals. I mean, I think many of us who come from communities where there are individuals who serve as police officers or who serve as teachers have seen how most of those public servants really struggle, when it comes to making ends meet. And so I really wanted to interrogate this question on whether the laws that exist currently protect those individuals who most times seek for assistance from micro lenders or from money lenders, because I mean those are two different institutions and that serve two different purposes. Do our laws really and truly protect them from over-exploitation? And by that we mean there are laws, and I know there's a provision in the Usury Act, in fact, that states that an individual, when you go to borrow money from a micro lender or a money lender, you should at least have one third of your salary. So whatever you borrow should not exceed one third of your salary. And most of the times we've seen how individuals in our community, individuals that we engage with, usually express complaints about how these very institutions, these micro lending institutions, take advantage of their financial positions in that they constantly go back, and therefore it's almost like your salary statement is just full of loans and money that you have really borrowed because you are struggling to make ends meet.
Interesting. Yeah, I get that one. Now, of course, today brings us to what happened today, the public hearing and how the Parliament Standing Committee the one that you represent, because it's so many names, planning, administration and all that. Yeah. So, what is your opinion, or what do you take away? From what you were hearing today? I mean, representations from NAMFISA, from the Bank of Namibia, from the Ministry of Finance. What is it that you're understanding now on laws, whether they really are protecting the consumers, or there's some sort of room for exploitation?
Well, I think one of the first things that I must make clear, especially during this interview, is that we're not against doing business, and we don't want individuals to stop doing business. Mm-hmm. And whether that is in a form of starting a micro lending institution or running a cash loan, that is not our intention.
Yeah.
Our intention is really to ensure that you as a consumer are protected, but also that you as a lender have some sort of platform where you can go, whether it is during disputes to resolve your disputes and so forth. So one of the things I really learned during today's interaction with the Ministry of Finance, NAMFISA and the Bank of Namibia, is that there is a lot of room for improvement.
True.
That is for sure. Of course, we can't regulate society to an extent where we take away one's ability to make decisions, but we can regulate society to guide, right? I believe in guided democracy, but I also believe that laws cannot necessarily regulate morality, or laws can't regulate your spending habits. That is a given. And so, of course, you come to a point where you understand that it's going to take so many of our efforts, it's going to take collective effort from all of us to really deal with this issue of over-indebtedness. One of the issues that I really picked up, one, like I mentioned earlier on, there is room for improvement. The laws exist, but the regulator has a lot of work to do. That's one. And one of the things they mentioned during the hearing is that they don't always know which micro lender or which money lender is unregistered. So it's very difficult for them to pick up on those unregulated micro lenders. Two, in our current laws, right? In our current laws, our laws do not make provision for some of those micro lenders, and so they remain unregulated. Three, the services of regulation in terms of NAMFISA, for example, is not decentralized to the rest of the region.
Mm.
So you find that they are mainly based in Ventu, but most Namibians are widely dispersed across the 14 regions. And so one of the things I really encourage them to do is that you need to decentralize your services, because it can be that we expect cash loans or micro lenders to only exist in Ventu. They exist all over the country, and therefore your services are needed all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Third, was the issue of the system administrator. Remember that government employees have had the system where if you go to a micro lender, say for, let me use a very basic example on this one. Letsego is a lender. They lend money to a borrower. So as a consumer, you go to Letsego, they ask for a 3 month bank statement. And that is done, of course, for affordability assessment to ensure that, one, as somebody that needs their services, you can actually afford to pay back this money. Now, although Letsego as a company would do it, other micro lenders we just discovered today don't actually do that. To actually have a proper assessment of your financial history, of your financial record, to ensure that, of course, you're getting into an obligation and you have the ability to meet that particular obligation. So there's a number of issues that we really picked up today. But one of the biggest issues, of course, that also kept on coming up was the system administration that allowed for government employees to be deducted automatically at the source of income. So by that, what we mean is that when you get your salary, it automatically deducts from your employer, right?
Right.
Now, that particular case is a big or huge bone of contention currently between the ministry and the micro lenders. And I know that in Parliament we use this term where it's sub judice, and that means that there's still court proceedings happening. This case is still in court.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're really looking forward to is government regaining control of civil servant salaries and ensuring that they are actually protected and the laws apply and are applied effectively to really protect them from over-exploitation.
Mm. Interesting. Now, one of the things that I did pick up myself as I attended part of the public hearing is the representation or the presentation from NAMFISA gave somewhat a picture of as if they were for the micro lenders and not really bringing out the complaints of the consumers and how the consumers feel. Now that leaves me with some sort of worry to see this is an institution that is supposed to find balance between the micro lenders and the consumers, and now when it's leaning more on the micro lenders, you begin to ask yourself, are they really having the teeth really to enforce that, even when regulation is passed, to enforce the micro lenders to ensure that they are within their limits?
Well, and you're right. I absolutely agree. And I also raised it during the question and answer session, where I said it feels as though this assessment that you went to do, and you hired a particular company to do an assessment of how consumers are protected, it seems that the outcome of that study was primarily based to protect them. It's almost to make a case out for the micro lenders and money lenders. It's not really, it doesn't really really showcase how consumers are exploited, number one. I would have thought that when you do or when you hire a company to do an analysis, that they would try and strike a balance between, of course, these are the challenges that micro lenders are faced with, and these are also some of the challenges that consumers are faced with, and therefore it would allow you as an institution like NAMFISA to strike the balance that we talk of even in their regulations and if you want to go as far as their act.
Mm.
So that's one of the issues that we are really concerned about, is that the analysis was done, but the findings are merely based on the risks that micro lenders face and not so much the exploitation that happens with the consumers.
Mm. In Angari, there's a saying that you need to give the flowers to those that deserve them. Honestly, from my side, it's an applause for bringing for tabling this motion into the August House. And it's a concern to so many consumers, to so many people, because they are affected one way or another. So thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
We show hope, obviously, when tangible results, and we do expect those tangible results, because from the boldness of the standing committee, we do know that something will come out of this. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We look forward to the Ministry of Finance as well tabling the consumer credit bill, which will also deal with the issues of, you know, credit collectors or debt collectors that are not nowhere in our law. So we also look forward to that. I think that's a positive development. You know what? It actually makes one wonder where debt collectors actually get the power to collect debt and come and take your furniture from your house. So there are so many questions that really came up during the conversation, and I'm just glad to have contributed some way in some way to really have this open conversation. So thank you so much for having me.
Okay. It's a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you. And then we had it from Ina Hengari. She's a member of our parliament and also part of the standing committee that is looking out for Namibians and, of course, consumers. So many Namibians get to go to micro lenders and lending institutions to borrow just to put food on the table. But nonetheless, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. This is On The Read, a news analysis. We're back to talk to a consumer analyst. Stay tuned.
E filoshisho o talikula ndula kona avewa yuk. E kwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. O atupa teleko meshwe kwashili palekolo fika mafio pe dola e miliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja o makwafo unamiti e nashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponje yo shilongo, shijo shitopo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando isho shelayash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis maule o minute dishona elela, lishangifako nhp.com.na o manga ino ya moruendo ponje yo shilongo. E mangono malandula fano, o do dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Ouri mnangeshefa no hara kushivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuru olongaha. Ninge kwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konora hitatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamerewa konora hitatu natu, mbali o hitatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, still speaking on this very interesting conversation, we now joined in studio telephonically by consumer analyst Salomo Ipinge. Good afternoon, Salomo Ipinge. It's a pleasure to have you with me in studio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me. Good afternoon to your listeners.
Salomo, I think it's only fair enough. I don't think we can have this conversation without consultation from a consumer analyst. Let's understand it from your perspective, right? Of course, it's a public hearing that was held today in regards to look at micro lenders and lending institutions, whether the laws that are currently in place really protect consumers from exploitation from this. What's your take on that?
Didi, thank you so much. I commend you and I applaud you for realizing the importance of this topic or this issue. And be able to say it so that it reached the mass. The credit industry in Namibia, in our country, it lacks legislative that protect the consumer, and that is long overdue. Right now, as a country, we are still using regime.
Mm.
And we all understand that these laws were designed to oppress a certain class of people, and are still the laws that are applicable, and that these are still the laws that we are using. We have had recent updates on the legislative as far as the credit industry is concerned, where we have the recent Banking Institution Act and the recent Microlending Act that were amended recently or enacted recently, but those have absolutely nothing to protect the consumer, but rather to protect the credit providers or the microlenders or the lenders that lend the money. So these laws that are currently in place are still designed to protect those who are in power, those who are the lenders. And I cannot stress enough that the regulatory bodies mm-hmm. that are appointed in our country that are there to be the middleman to ensure fairness between both the credit providers and the consumers have failed to protect our fellow Namibians.
Sure.
A complete failure. There is no regard whatsoever from the regulatory body's perspective as far as making effort to at least ensure that they put policies, urgent policies to protect the consumers, and then in the process do several consultations across board with all stakeholders involved to ensure that proper regulatory laws are set in place to mostly protect the consumer. But as we stand right now, the Namibian consumers are standing at a vulnerable position as far as being exploited by the credit providers. We would say 90% of the consumers in Namibia have been exploited by credit providers.
Absolutely.
Simply because the laws that are there are designed to protect the consumer. And again, please allow me time to just elaborate this because it's really, really very important because we do have the current pending consumer credit bill that has been running for the past 10 years, I would say, right now. And it has been through several consultations, but the way already that credit bill is already drafted in such a way that it is not designed to protect the consumer. So everything that was supposed to be put on the credit bill to protect the consumer has been removed, and the consumer is still put in a vulnerable position whereby they are never able to defend themselves from these powerful credit providers in an event where they need to exercise their rights.
Mm, interesting. And of course, this is what I've always known and come to understand, that NAMFISA is there to, you know, come in between and protect the consumers. But at this point in time, I don't know whether awareness is also not being made enough from their side, as we see so many people around us telling stories of how this and that has been taken from them because of money that they went to borrow from microlenders.
And let us just be blunt, straightforward. Really, NAMFISA has failed our people. And really, based on my observation throughout working in the credit industry as a whole, I have had a lot of encounters and several encounters with NAMFISA whereby it clearly shows that NAMFISA is standing there to work along with the credit providers. So they are literally manipulated by the credit providers. The ones that have got power are the ones that tell NAMFISA what to do. We have had incidents where a consumer is putting in a legitimate complaint about being overcharged or being unfairly treated by a credit provider. And they will simply wash their hands that, no, it's not in their scope to deal with such a nature of query, or they will send the consumer back and forth to seek for evidence when they are the regulator and they are the registrar of the registrants or of the credit providers. So they should be the ones that are regulating and are monitoring and are ensuring compliance from their registrant. But in case they protect the microlenders, they protect the credit providers. We find microlenders in the industry doing as they please, and if you tell them that you are going to report them to NAMPISA, they tell you right straightforward that not go, because they know that they already have connections within NAMPISA that the case will never go anywhere. And in this case, and I mean, I listened to that conversation in Parliament today. They were being asked, why did they allow the deduction code? And when they have allowed the deduction code, if it was so helpful for our consumer or for our people, have they been monitoring? And they are giving the questions that they are being given a blind eye, because in all honesty, NAMPISA is not doing what they were supposed to be doing for the consumer.
Very interesting and very bold analysis right there, Salome Pinge. I myself can attest to say I was in that boardroom today, and the picture or the feeling that I got from their presentation showed us if they are more of protecting the micro lenders instead of the consumers. And we have heard so many people around us complain about micro lenders and how they deal with them and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we can only really just hope for the best. But I think conversation like this, which are made transparent to the public and to consumer analysts, to economists, to media, are very relevant. And I think moving forward, I personally want to see more of such engagements from our leaders being made very public to discuss issues such as this that are affecting a lot of Namibians. We don't want to shy away from the fact that not so long ago we had, was it last year, where we had two teachers that committed suicide, all in the name of finances and lack. And then you can't take away from that probably they owed money and they couldn't put bread on the table.
Absolutely, and we see that happening, and this is not an issue that we should turn a blind eye on, because it's an issue that affects a lot of families. It breaks a lot of families. People commit suicide because of this situation.
Yeah, yeah.
The harassment that goes on in the industry, where creditors or lenders can just pitch up at the employee at the consumer's employer's workplace to come and collect money. That's an embarrassment that it's uncalled for. It's not by law. It's just not constitutional. And I just want to elaborate more. And I'm encouraging you with these platforms that these conversations are really taken serious, and they are put up more to the public, so the public can have an understanding, and perhaps that they can also contribute towards these consultations of new laws that are going to be implemented. For example, in the credit bill that is now being proposed, that is now on the table, there is an issue at a point where they are saying that, look, in an event where a credit provider or a lender lends money to a borrower recklessly, then the lender can then go to court and apply for the court to declare that loan being granted to them reckless. Okay, if the lender lent money to the borrower recklessly, which led the borrower to become over indebted, and all of a sudden they are now not able to cope, they can't survive, they don't have money because now they have to pay your payment to earn something. Where is that borrower going to get money to open a case in court or be represented in court by a lawyer? That is just unfair. Rather than setting up a normal procedure whereby a consumer can go to a registered individual or qualified individual that is able to do an assessment and be able to determine that this loan was indeed granted recklessly by the lender, and that necessary precautions should be taken. But instead of setting up systems that allow our people to access their legal rights. They are putting up systems that make it so difficult for our people to defend themselves. They will never be able to get to court.
It's unfortunate.
That is the law. That is the law that you want to pass on so that we can still oppress our own people. That is uncalled for.
I hear you.
Consulted by NAMPISA themselves very confidently, but in the public, saying that no, this is a better law that will help the consumer. That's not at all. But most of the time, they will give report that the financial or the credit industry in Namibia is stable and is sustainable and is growing, and there is a balance, which is actually not true. That's not what is reflecting in the industry.
On the ground.
That's
I hear
not,
you.
Mm.
Salamu Ipinge, thank you so much for making time for us. I do appreciate your insight coming from you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I really, really do hope that we have further and continued meetings around this topic.
Get top scores. Yes, marathon savings at USAVE. Rexona Shield Roll On a Deodorant, $22.99. 8 Karas sanitary pads, just $6.99. 500 milli Nuden Pine Gel Surface Cleaner, $24.99. 2 kilo bag Surf Hand Washing Powder, only $49.99. And Dry Nips Premium Disposable Nappies, just $139.99. Hurry to your favorite. You save.
Audio mnangeshefa noahara kushivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohoriki radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konora hitatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa konora hitatu natu, mbali o hitatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is...
Welcome back. Of course, this is On The Radar News Analysis. Should you be interested in airing your opinions and contributions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Now, of course, let's shift over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in Zimbabwe, as Zimbabwe and Botswana are set to introduce passport-free travel. Interesting, on Botswana's part, because Botswana and Namibia have that same partnership. Interesting.
And its opportunities. Development reflects the two nations' growing commitment to regional integration as they seek to harness opportunities presented by the African Continental Free Trade Area and the Southern African Development Community through the gradual removal of travel barriers.
While borders separate jurisdictions, our communities and even our wildlife continue to move freely. We are one people. In this regard, we must move decisively to ease the movement of people, goods and services. I propose a phased framework for the use of national identity documents in place of passports, beginning with the border communities and the short-term travel.
We've committed ourselves to the use of national ID cards going forward to facilitate and ease this movement. I've also shared with the Commission that in Botswana we are looking at the introduction of a cryptographic national ID card, which will obviate the need to carry the card around. You can have the details on your smartphone, and wherever you go, you basically just tap on the go. And we are in the process of deploying the requisite technology to achieve this.
The visiting Botswana president also reiterated the need for Africa to unite in confronting a rapidly changing global political landscape, urging the continent to claim its rightful place in world affairs.
A continent of 1.4 billion people, over 60% of them being young people, full of youthful energy, marauding, bristling with purpose. And we are a poor continent. No, we cannot be. And we have natural resources in staggering abundance and variety. How can we be poor? And how can we go out to the world as beggars, as weaklings, asking them to give us a seat at the table at the United Nations? No, we must break into that organization and claim our seat at the head of the table. I make these remarks forcefully and evocatively because they must represent the new thinking, the new chimurenga across the breadth and dimensions of the African continent.
Security matters featured prominently in the discussions, particularly the rising threat of synthetic drugs, with both sides calling for stronger cooperation to combat cross-border criminal networks. President Boko is expected to conclude his three-day state visit by officiating at the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair. Efat Msekiwa, SABC News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Meanwhile, in Uganda, a proposed sovereignty bill before Parliament is facing concerns over its potential impact on business, investment, and everyday financial flows.
Ugandan coffee exporters are among those who could face tougher compliance requirements if the sovereignty bill becomes a law. With global prices rising, coffee remains one of Uganda's top sources of foreign exchange. But under the proposed rules, large cross-border transactions could require government permission, raising concern among businesses about delays, higher costs, and reduced access to finance.
You will bring in your money, the bank will be able to say, please, we want to know whether this money is for the bill or against this bill. And for you to get that, you will need permission from the minister. You see, that's why it is. You need permission from the minister. And I think that's why we shall constrain the funding flows in the country.
The proposed law could also affect remittances, money sent home by Ugandans abroad, which are a key source of household income and foreign exchange. Analysts warn it could extend beyond political activity to ordinary financial support and business transactions.
If you look at the grandmother receiving medical help from a Kadama in Abu Dhabi, if she's not licensed, she can be arrested for 20 years or fined 2 billion. Our telecom companies are foreign. All employees of MTN, Airtel, and their agents have to be licensed as agents of foreigners. All bank agents have to be licensed as agents of foreigners every 2 years. So that means that if you work for an international company, you cannot get a 5-year contract.
The government says the bill is designed to regulate foreign funding and safeguard national sovereignty against foreign influence. but critics argue its reach could extend to companies with foreign shareholders, businesses financed by international loans, and firms working with global partners. Campaign groups say the proposed rules could complicate operations for investors, lenders, and civil society organizations that rely on external funding. They also warn of possible knock-on effects in sectors like health, education, and infrastructure, where international partnerships are common.
If you look at the requirement that you should not get more than 400 million Uganda shillings, how, if you are employing, say, 10 people, 20 people like the way we employ them here, can 400 million pay salaries for those people? So that means that the first thing is that NGOs or civil society groups must reduce the employees. If you reduce the people who work for the organization, it means the where you can go, the people you can engage, the people services you can provide, you are not providing them.
Lawmakers are now collecting public views before the bill moves to the next stage amid growing debate over how to balance national sovereignty with economic openness. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala, Uganda.
Now in other news, DRC Congo moves to ban a US dollar in order to boost confidence in its local currency.
And moving on, let's turn our attention to a high-stakes economic gamble in the heart of Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo has announced a bold new plan to take back control of its economy by banning the US dollar. Now, starting in April of 2027, the DRC will officially ban all cash transactions in foreign currencies. It is a massive move aimed at ending the country's decades-long dependence on the US dollar and forcing a return to the local currency, the Congolese franc. The central bank has been very clear. Starting April 2027, individuals and businesses will no longer be allowed to pay or receive cash in dollars. Commercial banks will also be prohibited from physically importing foreign banknotes into the country. Now, this doesn't mean the dollar is disappearing entirely, but it is moving behind a screen. If the Congolese people want to use foreign currency, it must be done electronically through the banking system. The goal of this move is oversight. By moving these transactions into the banking system, the government can finally track where the money is going. To understand why this is such a high-stakes move, we have to look at the history. Now, back in the 1990s, the DRC faced hyperinflation. The annualized inflation stood at 830.4%. During that chaos, people lost faith in the local franc and turned to the US dollar as a way to save their wealth. And that habit stuck. According to the International Monetary Fund, today about 90% of deposits and over 97% of loans in the DRC are in dollars. Now, the local franc has struggled to keep up, trading at roughly 2,300 per dollar today. Previous attempts have failed to fix this. Back in 2024, a rule requiring card machines to accept only francs had very little impact because the informal cash market is so huge. But this new ban targets the physical cash itself, which is a much more aggressive strategy. There is also an international pressure at play here. The DRC is currently on the Financial Action Task Force's grey list due to gaps in its anti-money laundering systems. By forcing money into traceable electronic channels, authorities hope to close the loopholes that allow suspicious transactions to go unnoticed.
Meanwhile, Africa's technology system is said to be showing recovery as funding rebounds.
This young tech team has built a business around artificial intelligence, a solution tailored to African markets. But behind the strategy sessions and product development, the biggest challenge remains funding. Despite early traction and a growing understanding of their market, attracting investors has been difficult. With fewer backers willing to fund ideas at this stage, the team is now relying on limited resources, growing slowly, one client at a time, while trying to prove their model can work.
The trend we get from most of our investors are like, how can we prove that this business will work? How can we prove that this business won't fail within a particular period of time? So the acid test there is basically getting enough data to like convince the investor.
What we've seen in the last 3 years has been some sort of freeze, and it impacts everybody, especially impacts us. And that what that means, first of all, for practical reality, is that you find less of VCs interested in funding ideas. And so you must be able to show a track that proves that your idea is fundable.
The experience reflects a broader trend across the continent. According to data from Africa, the Big Deal, startups raised $151 million in March, nearly three times the amount recorded a year ago. But the recovery is uneven. Only a handful of startups secured funding during the month. It's the lowest number in years. Investors are now focusing on fewer, more established companies with predictable revenue. Nearly two-thirds of the funding raised in March came through debt rather than traditional equity investments.
So investors are saying that we can't just put money somewhere and hope for the best in 10 years. We have to run capital in an efficient way. So if a company, if a startup has defensible business model and they have proven return on capital, it makes a lot of sense to give you money to do what you need to do rather than giving you money for the hopes that you will do something great in 10 years.
For more mature startups, the environment looks very different. Companies already generating steady revenue are able to secure new funding, mostly through debt financing, allowing them expand without giving up ownership.
Ideas no longer cut it in this market. You have to build it with personal finances, maybe with family-backed financing, but build something and ensure that what you are building is market fit. With debt financing, you get to repay them whatever it is. And they see that as a way much more stable and much more secure way of investing.
Over the past year, early-stage deals have dropped sharply, raising concerns about the pipeline of future innovators. While total funding remains relatively strong at about $3.3 billion over the past 12 months, it's increasingly concentrated in a handful of large deals. This shift is not unique to Africa. Globally, rising interest rates and economic uncertainties are pushing investors towards safer assets. Here in Africa, that caution is reshaping where capital goes and who gets left behind. Analysts warn that the trend could slow innovation if smaller startups continue to struggle for funding. For global investors, the shift reflects a broader recalibration across emerging markets, where capital is becoming more selective, not scarce. And as Africa's tech ecosystem evolves, the key concern remains that it may be more difficult for Africa to sustain innovation if more startups don't get the backing they need. Kelechi Amekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On The Reader News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkon Anadengi program, brought to you by my colleague Aloisa Shimi. Don't forget the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30 and the Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 hours. Also, don't forget to tune in on our weekend shows, particularly if you want to continue to listen to my voice, 1900 hours to 2100 hours on Saturday. We bring you life lessons and other shows that we keep you informed and engaged right here on Eagle FM. From Indafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful weekend.